Welcome to the Reality Revolution. I'm your host, Brian Scott. Today, the focus of this episode is self-control, the key to prosperity and riches. The word key is used in a lot of prosperity writing. You're told that this is the key and that's the key. There are many keys to prosperity and riches. It is a detailed lock that has lots of different doors. One of the key elements to true prosperity and success, outlined in the book The Law of Success by Napoleon Hill, is self-control. This is one area I am personally struggling with. I'm making it my intention to gain greater self-control on my path to understanding who I truly am and to gain riches, abundance, and prosperity in order to be of the greatest service to all. I struggle with this all the time. At times my will is weak. I used to drink a lot. I've been through stages of addiction on several different levels. I have an addictive personality, for sure. And sometimes it's hard for me to say no. Just the other day, I was at the gym. I had an amazing workout. Really, got a lot of work done. And then out I walked, and as I walked outside, I had a secret desire for a burger, and I had made the commitment I would never eat any more hamburgers. But I was by myself. My wife didn't know. So I went over to Burger King and had a beautiful Texas Whopper. It was amazing. Sitting there in the parking lot, eating this burger, and I began to think about my own self-control and little incidents like this through my life when I would lose self-control, maybe go to get that ice cream or something that I didn't necessarily need at the time. There was some part of me that was resisting the fact that I couldn't have it. There was a part of me that couldn't say no. And when I look back on my life, when I'm in periods of self-control or when I have my greatest success and I'm in the flow to such a state where it's easier for me to get things done, I'm much more successful when I do them. Now, we previously talked about enthusiasm, which is an important element, and it's kind of a dichotomy because enthusiasm and self-control can work against each other. And in the book, The Law of Success, Napoleon Hill mentions enthusiasm first, before self-control, which is lesson 8. Generating enthusiasm is still important, and it helps to transmit influence to others. But you have to understand self-control with it, through which you may direct your enthusiasm to constructive ends. Without self-control, enthusiasm resembles the unharnessed lightning of an electrical storm. It may strike anywhere. It may destroy life and property. Enthusiasm is the vital quality that arouses you to action, while self-control is the balance wheel that directs your action so that it will build up and not tear down. To be a person who is well-balanced, you must be a person in whom enthusiasm and self-control are equalized. A survey, which was completed by Napoleon Hill of the 160,000 adult inmates of penitentiaries of the United States, discloses that 92% of these men and women were in prison because they lacked the necessary self-control to direct their energies constructively. It is a fact that the majority of our griefs come about through a lack of self-control. The Holy Scriptures are full of admonition in support of self-control. They even urge us to love our enemies and to forgive those who injure us. The law of non-resistance runs like a golden cord throughout the Bible and most mystical writings. Today, the records of those whom the world calls great and observe that every one of them possesses this quality of self-control. I see self-control reflected in Jesus. I see self-control reflected in the Buddha and Muhammad and the great spiritual teachers and the mentors that I look up to. I wish to resonate with this self-control. For example, study the characteristics of Lincoln. In the midst of his most trying hours, he exercised patience, poise, and self-control. These were some of the qualities which made him the great man he was. He found disloyalty in some of the members of his cabinet, but for the reason that his disloyalty was toward him personally, and because those in whom he found it had qualities which made them valuable to his country, Lincoln exercised self-control and disregarded the objectionable qualities. How many men do you know who have self-control to equal this? In language more forceful than it was polished, Billy Sunday exclaimed from the pulpit, "There is something as rotten as hell about the man who is always trying to show some other fellow up." However, self-control becomes an important factor on the law of success, because the lack of it works hardships on those who become its victims. As for the reason that those who do not exercise it, they suffer the loss of a great power which they need in their struggle for achievement of their definite chief aim. The definite chief aim is a principle that we have mentioned in other episodes. An entire book is written about it by Mitch Horowitz, which took this wonderful idea from Napoleon Hill's writings. The idea, if you truly want to create your reality, you have to find a definite chief aim. There's magic in it. In focusing on your definite chief aim, you will find greater success than simply trying to create your reality around small little things. So if you neglect to exercise self-control, you are not only likely to injure others, but you are sure to injure yourself. Now let us examine the scope of the meaning of the term self-control as it is used in connection with this episode. By describing the general conduct of a person who possesses it, a person with well-developed self-control does not indulge in hatred, envy, jealousy, fear, revenge, or any similar destructive emotions. A person with well-developed self-control does not go into ecstasies or become ungovernably enthusiastic over anything or anybody. Here is an emphasis to reduce the importance in certain scenarios that you don't become ungovernably enthusiastic over anything or anybody. Greed and selfishness and self-approval beyond the point of accurate self-analysis and appreciation of one's actual merits indicate lack of self-control in one of its most dangerous forms. Self-confidence is one of the most important essentials of success, but when this faculty is developed beyond the point of reason, it becomes very dangerous. Self-sacrifice is a commendable quality. When it is carried to extremes, it is not. It also becomes one of the dangerous forms of lack of self-control. You owe it to yourself not to permit your emotions to place your happiness in the keeping of another person. Love is essential for happiness, but the person who loves so deeply that his or her happiness is placed entirely in the hands of another resembles the little lamb who crept into the den of the nice, gentle little wolf and begged to be permitted to lie down and go to sleep, or the canary bird that persisted in playing with the cat's whiskers. A person with well-developed self-control will not permit himself to be influenced by the cynic or the pessimist, nor will he permit another person to do his thinking for him. A person with well-developed self-control will stimulate his imagination and his enthusiasm until they have produced action, but he will then control that action and not permit it to control him. A person with well-developed self-control will never, under any circumstances, slander another person or seek revenge for any cause whatsoever. A person with self-control will not hate those who do not agree with him. Instead, he will endeavor to understand the reason for their disagreement and profit by it. We come now to a form of the lack of self-control which causes more grief than all other forms combined. It is the habit of forming opinions before studying the facts. The habit of forming opinions before studying the facts. We will not analyze this particular form in detail for the reason that is fully covered in the episode on accurate thought. As Napoleon Hill says, no one has any right to form an opinion that is not based either upon that which he believes to be facts or upon a reasonable hypothesis. Yet if you will observe yourself carefully, you will catch yourself forming opinions on nothing more substantial than your desire for a thing to be or not to be. See this all the time. A person has a particular political philosophy and they immediately form an opinion around what they personally believe and not the truth of what's actually happening. See it all the time. Another grievous form of lack of self-control is the spending habit. I have suffered through this. I have reference, of course, to this habit of spending beyond one's needs. This habit is obviously more and more prevalent with the history of bankruptcy in this country. So many stories of people buying homes and losing them, me included. On every hand, we see people buying automobiles with huge monthly payments, mortgaging their futures to their cars. This is a speed-mad money-spending age in which we are living. And the uppermost thought in the minds of most of us is to live faster than our neighbors. Studies abound throughout the internet and in newspapers that talk about people that have struggled financially. A large percentage of people do not have even a savings account. A lot of people end up having more debt than money. It happens all the time. We are creatures of imitation. We find it hard to resist the temptation to do that which we see others doing. Oftentimes, when someone sees their neighbor buy a Buick, they must imitate them, and if they cannot scrape together enough to make the first payment, they at least must have a Ford. Meanwhile, they take no heed of the morrow. The old-fashioned rainy day nest egg has become obsolete. We live from day to day. Napoleon Hill looked out into the future 100 years ago and said, "Lack of self-control is being developed in the oncoming generations by their parents, who have become victims of the spending habit. 3 generations ago, practically any boy could mend his own shoes with the family cobbling outfit. Today, the boy takes his shoes to the corner shoe shop and pays $1.75 for heels and half soles, and this habit is by no means confined to the rich and well-to-do classes. I am safe in assuming that you are struggling to attain success, for if you were not, you would not be listening to this episode. So let me remind you then that a little savings account will attract many an opportunity to you that would not come your way without it. The size of the account is not important, as is the fact that you have established the saving habit, for this habit marks you as a person who exercises an important form of self-control. People don't like to be told that they have to have any level of self-control. People don't like to think about self-control. It's not a comfortable thing or topic, but self-discipline is the most essential factor in the development of personal power because it enables you to control your appetite and your tendency to spend more than you earn and your habit of striking back at those who offend you and the other destructive habits which cause you to dissipate your energies through non-productive effort that takes on forms too numerous to be cataloged in this lesson. As Hill explains, before you can achieve success in the higher and broader sense, you must gain such thought control over yourself that you will be a person of poise. While others may sidetrack your ambitions not a few times, remember that discouragement most frequently comes from within. You are the product of at least 1 million years of evolutionary change. For countless generations preceding you, nature has been tempering and refining the materials that have gone into your makeup. Step by step, she has removed from the generations that have preceded you the animal instincts and baser passions until she has produced in you the finest specimen of animal that lives. She has endowed you through this slow evolutionary process with reason and poise and balance sufficient to enable you to control and do with yourself whatever you will. No other animal has ever been endowed with such self-control as you possess. You've been endowed with the power to use the most highly organized form of energy known to man, that of thought. It is not improbable that thought is the closest connecting link there is between the material physical things of the world and the world of divinity. You have not only the power to think, but what is 1,000 times more important still, you have the power to control your thoughts. and direct them to do your bidding. This brings us to the really important part of this lesson. Think about this and meditate on it. You have the power to control your thoughts and make them do your bidding. Don't believe me? Just say that. I have the power to control my thoughts and make them do my bidding. Your brain may be likened to a dynamo in this respect, that it generates or sets into motion the mysterious energy called thought. The stimuli that start your brain into action are of two sorts. One is auto-suggestion, and that's the messages that you have all around the world all the time. And the other is suggestion. You can select the material out of which your thinking is produced, and that is auto-suggestion or self-suggestion. You can permit others to select the material out of which your thinking is produced, and that is suggestion. It is a humiliating fact that most thought is produced by outside suggestions of others. And it is more humiliating still to have to admit that the majority of us accept this suggestion without either examining it or questioning its soundness. We watch TV daily as though every word were based upon fact. We're swayed by the gossip and idle chatter of others as though every word were true. Thought is the only thing over which you have absolute control, yet unless you are the proverbial exception, which is about one out of every 10,000, you permit other people to enter the sacred mansion of your mind and there deposit through suggestion their troubles and woes, adversities and falsehoods, just as though you did not have the power to close the door and keep them out. You have within your control the power to select the material that constitutes the dominating thoughts of your mind. And just as surely as you are listening to these lines, those thoughts which dominate your mind will bring you success or failure according to their nature. The fact that thought is the only thing over which you have absolute control is within itself of most profound significance, as it strongly suggests that thought is your nearest approach to divinity on this earthly plane. This fact carries another highly impressive suggestion, namely that thought is your most important tool, the one with which you may shape your worldly destiny according to your own liking. Surely divine providence did not make thought the sole power over which you have absolute control without associating with that power potentialities which, if understood and developed, would stagger the imagination. Self-control is solely a matter of thought control. So I'm going to read that again. I'm reading it for myself. Self-control is solely a matter of thought control. Say it out loud with me. Self-control is solely a matter of thought control. Meditate over it. Because it is without a doubt the most important single sentence that I have given so far in talking about prosperity. You are studying how to become prosperous because you are earnestly seeking truth and understanding sufficient to attain some high station, some particular goal, something or dream that you have. You're searching for the magic key that will unlock the door to the source of power, and yet you have the key in your own hands and you may make use of it the moment you learn to control your thoughts. Place in your own mind, through the principle of auto-suggestion, the positive, constructive thoughts which harmonize with your definite chief aim in life, and that mind will transform those thoughts into physical reality and hand them back to you as a finished product. This is thought control. When you deliberately choose the thoughts which dominate your mind and firmly refuse admittance to outside suggestion, you are exercising self-control in its highest and most efficient form. Man is the only living animal that can do this. How many millions of years nature has required in which to produce this animal, no one knows. But every intelligent student of psychology knows that the dominating thoughts determine the actions and the nature of the animal. The process through which one may think accurately is a subject that has been discussed in the Accurate Thought episode. The point we wish clearly to establish in this particular lesson is that thought, whether accurate or inaccurate, is the most highly organized functioning power of your mind, and that you are but the sum total of your dominating or most prominent thoughts. If you'd be a master salesman, whether of goods and wares or of personal services, you must exercise sufficient self-control to shut out all adverse arguments and suggestions. Most salesmen have so little self-control that they hear the prospective purchaser say no even before he says it. Not a few salesmen hear this fatal word no even before they come into the presence of their prospective purchaser. They have so little self-control, they actually suggest to themselves that their prospective purchaser will say no when asked to purchase their wares. How different is the man of self-control? He not only suggests to himself that his prospective purchaser will say yes, but if the desired yes is not forthcoming, he stays on the job until he breaks down the opposition and forces a yes. If his prospective purchaser says no, he does not hear it. If his prospective purchaser says no a second and a third and a fourth time, he does not hear it, for he is a man of self-control, and he permits no suggestions to reach his mind except those which he desires to influence him. I started to apply this lesson after I went and got the burger, and I had another urge for something similar, some particular licorice that I really like. I didn't need to eat it, and I was able to exercise self-control by the thoughts incoming. I wasn't just controlled by the thoughts that were coming in. I will continue to focus on my thoughts, and if I make a mistake, I'm not going to kill myself over it, but I'm going to try to make it my intention to become controlling of my thoughts. So even with slip-ups, over time, you can place enough positive thoughts that it becomes your dominating personality. Hill explains, for instance, that losing your temper, and with it your case, or your argument, or your sale, or whatever it is, marks you as one who has not yet familiarized yourself with the fundamentals upon which self-control is based. And the chief one of these fundamentals is the privilege of choosing the thoughts that dominate the mind. A student in one of Hill's classes asked how one went about controlling one's thoughts when in a state of intense anger. And he replied, in exactly the same way that you would change your manner and the tone of your voice if you were in a heated argument with a member of your family and heard the doorbell ring, warning that company was about to visit you. You would control yourself because you would desire to do so. If you've ever been in a similar predicament where you found it necessary to cover up your real feelings and change the expressions on your face quickly, you know how easily it can be done, and you also know that it can be done because one wants to do it. Back of all achievement, back of all self-control, back of all thought control, is the magic something called desire. It is no misstatement of fact to say that you are limited only by the depths of your desires. When your desires are strong enough, you will appear to possess superhuman powers to achieve. No one has ever explained this strange phenomenon of the mind, and perhaps no one ever will explain it. But if you doubt that it exists, you have to but experiment and be convinced. If you were in a building that was on fire and all the doors and windows were locked, the chances are that you would develop sufficient strength with which to break down the average door because of your intense desire to free yourself. If you desire to acquire the art of successful negotiation, as you undoubtedly will when you understand its significance in relation to your achievements of your definite chief aim, you will do so, providing your desire is intense enough. Plant in your mind the seed of a desire that is constructive by making the following your creed and the foundation code of ethics. This is what Napoleon Hill recommended. You say, I wish to be of service to my fellow men as I journey through life. To do this, I have adopted this creed as a guide to be followed in dealing with my fellow beings, to train myself so that never, under any circumstances, will I find fault with any person, no matter how much I may disagree with him or how inferior his work may be, as long as I know he is sincerely trying to do his best. To respect my country, my profession, and myself, to be honest and fair with my fellow men and women as I expect them to be honest and fair with me, to be a loyal citizen of my country, to speak of it with praise and act always as a worthy custodian of its good name, to be a person whose name carries weight wherever it goes, to base my expectations of reward on a solid foundation of service rendered, to be willing to pay the price of success in honest effort, to look upon my work as an opportunity to be seized with joy and made the most of, and not as a painful drudgery to be reluctantly endured, to remember that success lies within myself, in my own brain, to expect difficulties and to force my way through them, to avoid procrastination in all its forms, and never under any circumstances put off until tomorrow any duty that should be performed today. Finally, to take a good grip on the joys of life, so I may be courteous to men and women, faithful to friends, true to God, a fragrance in the path I tread. The energy which most people dissipate through lack of self-control would, if organized and used constructively, bring all the necessities and all the luxuries desired. The time which many people devote to gossiping about others would, if controlled and directed constructively, be sufficient to attain the object of their definite chief aim, if they had such an aim. All successful people grade high on self-control, all failures grade low, generally zero, on this important law of human conduct. Hill explains that self-control was one of the marked characteristics of all the successful leaders he analyzed in gathering material for his Law of Success course. Luther Burbank said that, in his opinion, self-control is the most important of the 15 laws of success. During all his years of patient study and observation of the evolutionary processes of vegetable life, he found it necessary to exercise the faculty of self-control despite the fact that he was dealing with inanimate life. John Burroughs, the naturalist, said practically the same thing, that self-control stood near the head of the list in importance of the 15 laws of success. The man or woman who exercises complete self-control cannot be completely defeated, as Emerson has so well stated in his essay on compensation, for the reason that obstacles and opposition have a way of melting away when confronted by the determined mind that is guided to a definite end with complete self-control. Every wealthy man whom I have analyzed, referring to those who have become wealthy through their own efforts, Hill says, showed such positive evidence that self-control had been one of his strong points that he reached the conclusion that no man can hope to accumulate great wealth and kept it without exercising this necessary quality. The saving of money requires the exercise of self-control of the highest order, as I hope has been made quite clear. In the lesson on self-control, Hill gives pages and pages of different examples of people that exercise self-control, and I recommend that you read that lesson, Lesson 8, in Napoleon Hill's The Law of Success. The key thing, at the end of the lesson, he quotes the Bible saying, "Why is it when once a man or woman begins to make money, the whole world seems to beat a pathway to their door?" Take any person that you know who enjoys financial success, and they will tell you that they are being constantly sought and that opportunities to make money are constantly being urged upon them. "To him that hath shall be given, but to him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath." This quotation from the Bible used to seem ridiculous, yet how true it is when reduced to its concrete meaning. Yes, to him that hath shall be given. If he hath failure, lack of self-confidence, hatred, or lack of self-control, to him shall these qualities be given in greater abundance. But if he hath success, self-confidence, self-control, patience, persistence, and determination, to him shall these qualities be increased. Sometimes it may be necessary to meet force with force until we overpower our opponent or adversary. But while he is down is a splendid time to complete the retaliation by taking him by the hand and showing him a better way to settle disputes. It is for you to decide what you want your fellow men to do, and it is for you to get them to do it through the law of retaliation. The divine economy is automatic and very simple. We receive only that which we give. How true is it that we receive only that which we give? It is not that which we wish for that comes back to us, but that which we give. I implore you to make use of this law, not alone for material gain, but better for the attainment of happiness and goodwill toward men. In this episode, we've learned a great principle, probably the most important principle of psychology. We have learned that our thoughts and actions toward others resemble an electric magnet, which attracts to us the same sort of thoughts and the same sort of action that we ourselves create. We have control over these thoughts and actions. We have control over our lives. We are struggling with some aspect of ourselves that does not want control, that does not have control. It could be reduced to what you eat. It could be involved with how you love, how you spend money. There's so many different aspects to this that are reflected in so many things that you may be doing in your life. The key is, if you want to achieve your goal, you have to control your thoughts. You have to control your actions and behavior. So for me, when I lost control and ate that burger, I've made it my intention to have greater control over myself by studying those who are of a greater self-control and by seeing its importance in my life and by affirming I have control. I am in control of my life. By monitoring my thoughts that are related to my urges and actions. And I hope to improve and get better at this because I know that this particular attribute, when reflected on everything else, is important in my life. With the money that I make and the way I spend it, the way I save it, the way I invest it, the actions that I take, the foods that I eat, the drinks that I drink. I have control over all these things. So a lot of times this self-control is a battle within of my ego. Within you, you have this element that has a mind of its own. It does selfish things. It has selfish desires. It is blocking you from source, from the greater version of who you are. So you're in a battle with this ego, and this ego has no self-control. This ego is a prison guard. And if we can escape it, we can gain the control that we need over our lives. There's this little voice in your head that thinks it has control that guides you and pushes you. So I make it my intention now. And if you want to join me over the next 30 days, I want to establish self-control in my life, over my thoughts, over my feelings. I'm going to control my thoughts. And if I have a thought that comes up that is not what I want to think, I will immediately change it. I will immediately acknowledge it. I will immediately think a positive thought in its replacement until I reach a point where I am not thinking negatively. If this is a habit and facet of all people who are successful and rich, then I must adopt this state of self-control. I must learn to control my urges and let my urges propel me in an inspiring ways toward what it is I want. Commanding through auto-suggestion, guiding my inner urges towards a greater connection with Source and all that is. So share with me your own path, your struggles with self-control. Every single person I'm talking to has struggled with it. I've told you about what I've struggled with, and that's just the tipping point. Living in this third density world is a battle of self-control. With the heavy physical, chemical bodies that we exist within, there are constant urges, feedback loops of synaptic connections, creating these urges that we're learning to break down and control through the actions and ways that we think. And if we can gain a control over our thoughts and actions and feelings, we can gain control over our reality. Because really, self-control is control over our reality, because we are controlling the way we think. And that is the primary lesson of this advanced ongoing course in reality creation. You can find all episodes of The Reality Revolution at therealityrevolution.com. And welcome to The Reality Revolution.